Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax, Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. No fooling, fellow conspiracy realists. As you are listening, we are coming to you live-ish from the absolute pinnacle of human evolution so far. Think about it. You got phones that have smart in the name, smartphones. You can get hot pockets with almost anything in them. Humanity hasn't gotten everything right. Quite the opposite. But you got to hand it to these scrappy primates, right? They struggled, they strove, they persevered, you know?
And they thinking strode. Of, you know?
They strode
real,
and strove.
They had a real gait, you know? Those primates, mm-hmm. Let me tell you.
Strove is actually also the correct past tense of strive.
It's not striven like I've been saying all these years? Dang.
It depends. Yeah, it depends. But it's also American English. So we can kind of do what we want as long as people understand us. And that's another evolution that humans achieved. The ability to use language is amazing. You know, you read a book from hundreds of years ago and you're hearing the thoughts of a dead person in your own mind. I don't think people understand how cool and creepy reading is, but but there we are, right? I mean, all of this, all of these millions of other primates that we will never meet played a role in bringing you here to this podcast today. And there are, frankly, unanswerable questions that remain about the origin and growth of human civilization. But right now, most scientists are largely on the same page, sort of, in the idea that this is the first time this has happened. But what an interesting question to ask. What if it's not?
Yeah, at least the first time that a creature has evolved on the planet that is intelligent enough to make machines that make other things, right? That in particular, I think, is important for this episode. Industrialization, growing a civilization large enough to support huge populations in one place.
Yeah. And now, and that's an excellent way to kind of narrow the scope here too, because as we'll find, we need to narrow the scope as much as possible. But you might be asking yourself, guys, What are you talking about? I don't read the headlines or titles of the show. I'm a mover and a shaker. I got stuff going on in the modern world.
Yeah, I got stuff to move and things to shake.
Well, here are the facts. Let's start at the beginning. You know, Earth happens billions of years ago. Humanity is a life form that still doesn't understand how the universe came about. The current theory is the Big Bang, you know. And from there, we know that it is generally accepted right now that the things we call humans evolved from other primates on the African continent. If you look at the lineage, as far as people know, from a very imperfect fossil record, then you can see that good old Homo sapiens, that I like to call Homo sapiens, diverged, right, from the lineage that would later lead to our friends, the chimpanzees and the bonobos. This happened somewhere between 13 million and 5 million years ago. So the ballpark guess there has millions of years of maybe sometime in here.
Yeah, you know, give or take 8 million. It's all good.
When you zoom out far enough, what's 8 million between friends, you know? And really quickly, I just want to voice a correction here. Dear friend of the show, Christy, pointed out that when I was making a reference to the movie Nope, I said that the ape that is depicted in it was an orangutan. That is so not right. Orangutans are orange. It is a chimp. A chimp was the species of that particular character. Terrifying character.
Oh, yes. Terrifying, but wonderful film. Props to Jordan Peele. Not sure what you're doing today, Jordan, but, you know, drop a line if you want to be on the show. Would love to chat you up. So, yeah, there's a heck of a ballpark, and this is not a ding on the excellent scientists who have been working for generations to figure all this out for us. Let's just keep it high level. So, 5 million years ago, possibly due to creative differences, what will become humanity splits paths. And as far back as 1.5 million years ago, the things that would become humans may have begun to harness fire, to use it to cook, to use it to stay warm in the wild. Again, that's a large ballpark, but it definitely happened by at least 250,000 years ago. So 1.5 million to 250,000 years ago. Somewhere in between, about 500,000 years ago, our pal Homo sapien, Homo is the genus, Homo is Latin for man. So Homo sapien branches off and makes a bunch of, what do we call them in our ancient humanity episode, ancient hominid episode? We called them mixtapes. Mixtapes of what would ultimately become all of most of us listening today, you know, Neanderthals, Denisovans, the real life hobbits out there in Southeast Asia.
Do you see the guy that discovered the Denisovans or rediscovered the Denisovans won a Nobel Prize recently this year?
I did not. No, I wasn't aware. That's awesome and well deserved too. Especially because Denisovans are such a mystery. Do check out that episode, folks. You might be surprised by just how alive the past is, how it stays with us. And it is a statistical certitude that many of the people listening to today's show have a little bit of Neanderthal or Denisovan lineage in them. Not a bunch, not a ton, you know, like a small percentage.
Yeah, I don't even think that Ancestry.com or 23andMe picks up on that. It's that level of small.
Yeah, agreed. And there are some populations or parts of the world that are much more likely to have larger percentages. But so far as we know right now, there's no like 97% Neanderthal or Denisovan running around today, as far as we know.
So if there were, it would be kind of a massive find. It would be like the missing link kind of situation, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they would have. It would be like winning the lottery and getting struck by lightning twice on the same day. That's how astronomical the odds are. But if it happens, that would be amazing, especially because Homo sapiens, what we would recognize as modern humans, at least anatomically, they hit the stage just 300,000 years ago. So from 13 million years ago all the way up to just 300,000 years ago, we have humans that look like humans, mostly. But behaviorally, they're not what we would call modern. They're still very different. That's going to take more than another 150,000 years. It's not until 70,000 or 50,000 years ago.
And isn't it funny that evolution mainly got the basic equipment right that early, and the rest of the evolution kind of happened inside, you know, in the brain.
Mm-hmm. The bicameral mind. Yeah. And there are other interesting explorations we've done on the idea of psychedelics accelerating those behavioral changes, as well as a lovely episode that I actually re-listened to with Joe McCormick from Stuff to Blow Your Mind. That one's a banger. Check out the bicameral mind there. So, all right, we've got our people. It took millions of years of brutal evolution, and we won't know most of the stuff that went down, but we know largely 70,000, 50,000 years ago, people are starting to think the way people think now. And that's when we see religion emerge, ritualistic burial, other rituals. People are thinking abstractly about a world they cannot necessarily see. They start going out on the ocean, I think maybe a little earlier even, more advanced weaponry, and then multiple groups of anatomically modern humans are leaving the African continent over time. And this is a little depressing, but human civilization has been a series of close calls and bottlenecks at the weirdest moments. So I don't know about you guys, but I was surprised to find that a ton of scholars, quite like a strong contingent, if not a majority of experts, will argue that the earlier migrant waves just died out. Like they just couldn't survive. The further north you go, the environment changes radically and so on. And so they will tell you that all modern non-African Homo sapiens are descended from groups that left right during that 70,000 to 50,000 year time period. And they didn't know agriculture either. They were kind of improvising, right? Can I find something that I can eat that won't kill me? Can I run this, antelope down, et cetera? Oh, don't let that tiger get me. That kind of vibe. Very stressful.
Yeah, because our best relics of agriculture, our best understanding of when it came about is only about 10,000 years ago, which if you think about people just moving out and trying it on their own without having a reliable way to create their own food is astounding.
Mm-hmm. And then probably, honestly, moving like other animals, right? You're responding to environmental pressures, threats from out groups, not enough food, not enough water, too many predators, not enough prey, that kind of thing. I always want to take a moment and just thank whomever was responsible for figuring out agriculture. I think about it constantly. Somebody was paying attention and went through a lot of what ifs, right? A lot of trial and error. You look at a grain, you look at a seed, and you think, I don't know, bury it. No, I should bury it somewhere else.
It's the kind of thing kids do. It's like just experimentation, just randomness. And then enough people observe that behavior and observe the results. And then it starts kind of being a part of that historical game of telephone that we talk about, where things get kind of passed down from observation and retelling. And then gradually over time, it starts to kind of resemble what we know and rely on today.
Excellent point. Yeah. And, over the span of their existence, humans have tried to bury and grow a lot of things, including teeth, just to see what happens. Just give it a go.
Yeah. But once we figured it out, right, around that 10,000 year ago mark, once we figured out how to grow our own food, we started living near that food, right? A center where we can grow a lot of food. Well, guess what? That's where we live now. A lot of us, way more than we used to.
Welcome home. You know what I mean? Now more of the children will survive to adulthood. And now we will also be able to increasingly take care of people we might have just left in the woods earlier. You know what I mean? Our bad, says early humanity, but we're different now. This is called the Neolithic Revolution.
We're bad in different ways.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. This is called the Neolithic Revolution. And right now, even in 2022, experts still can't agree on exactly why this happened, why it seems like suddenly around that time, people got it. But the idea spread memetically, virally. You know, people can toss good ideas to one another. Always have been either the best communicators or the worst. Not really a middle ground. This agriculture, like you said, Matt, we live here now. It leads to the first cities. Those become the first states during what's known as the Bronze Age, which leads to the Bronze Age collapse. Again, a lot of stuff we're throwing at you. At least four ancient civilizations figured out writing on their own, which is also very impressive. It'd be Mesopotamia, Egypt, China, and parts of Mesoamerica. But if you're looking for the first complex civilization, you're looking in Mesopotamia, in Sumer. And then, look, there's all sorts of stuff. Fast forward. Paul, give us like a fast forward cue. A lot of history's happening. A lot of empires, religions, they're rising, they're falling. People are falling in love. They're mad at each other. They're burning cities. They're sacking towns, you know? Prophets are born. Is that a good summation of like the next several thousand years?
I would say so. It's like, you know, any of those top-down civilization type games or like The Sims even, sort of a civilization simulator. You can kind of see that stuff happening on a much faster timeline.
Yeah, and our game of telephone is transferring from mouth into technology, right? And that continues down the line till you get to this point right now where you've got a smartphone made out of precious metals that is replicating our voices.
Yes, and this is a result of something called the Industrial Revolution. New horizons for humanity. They're making technology with consequences that won't be widely understood until centuries have passed. And this period of time is popularly known as the Anthropocene, the Age of Man. It's pretty impressive when you think about that escalation. Human beings have been in their current form for hundreds of thousands of years, but only in the last few centuries have they developed all that technology we're talking about.
And it's also fascinating to think about. I mean, if you want to take a spiritual view of it as some kind of prime mover or creator mythos, all of the stuff that we needed to make that technology was there for us the whole time. You know what I mean? Like all of these precious metals that you're talking about, it was just about finding them and putting them to the right use. How crazy is that when you really drill into it and think about it? I mean, all of this stuff, you know, folks that really, you know, have religious beliefs, the idea that all of this was made for us. And that usually relates to things like animals that we need to eat and plants and things that we need for shade and oxygen. But it also applies to things way, way deeper down in the Earth's crust that we couldn't even get to until we made the tools to do that properly. And then we had to evolve the know-how to harness these things.
Mm-hmm. It's a weird concept. God made uranium. We just spun it until it became the really dangerous kind.
Well, God, let's assume a creator exists. Then imagine this poor schmuck is like, I made uranium. Whoops. For a totally different
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
I
what
don't
are you
know
doing?
What you, what are you guys doing down there?
And yet, I mean, props to you. Because it works, I mean, you know, but heck, man, you're going to blow yourselves up in no time. I meant for this to last a hell of a lot longer than what y'all are leading to.
Why are you always trying to kill each other? You know what I mean? This is nuts. This is not how I saw it going. That's our God impression, our collective God impression. But
he's kind of like a Jerry Seinfeld figure. He's like, what's the deal with humans? I mean, always doing this crazy stuff. Where do the socks go in the dryer?
Why are they so into their weird holes? Anyway, so We might edit that one.
No, you can take that however you wish. We dig a lot of holes, and we possess weird holes.
And digging weird holes is actually part of this story. Thank you, Noel. We saved it. So another philosophical thing I would add to that question, not in contradiction, but it's something else that should be on people's minds when we think about this concept of intelligent design, is that human beings evolved here. So if something intelligent evolved in a very different place, then it very well might feel that everything was just so in Goldilocks zone for it. So it's an important question. It's a thing to wrestle with.
Like places we have no understanding of, where the rules might be completely different, where up might be down and they have something else that's uranium-like, but not, I mean, this also gets you to start thinking about multiverse ideas where maybe it's like ours, but things are just a little tweaked, you know, or we could think about it in terms of everything existing on the same timeline. There are just places so far beyond our grasp that have similar Goldilocks zones and rules that just do not resemble ours.
Yeah, I think it's David Brin, I want to say, is a sci-fi author who wrestles with a lot of that, like hydrogen-based life, silicon-based life, maybe somewhere. From what humans know about the size of the universe, it's quite conceivable that somewhere now, or once upon a time, or in the future, there is a silicon-based civilization, and there's one nutso silicon-based astrobiology professor, xenobiologist, who's going, I think there might be carbon-based life forms. And they're like, you were out of your circuits, bro.
We're going to burn you.
Life forms?
Yeah, right.
They wouldn't even have burning, though. It would be something else. We're going to isify you. I don't know what it would be, but it would be something else.
Dissolute you. Yeah. I don't know. Exactly. Yeah. So, while all of this is happening, while humans are doing their best and for the most part succeeding in the long term, people start asking questions about the empires, communities that came before, and saying, how much do we really know about them? You know, you go far enough back into ancient civilizations and history transforms into myth. You know what I mean? And it's difficult to prove or disprove some things. But that's not the question today. Question today is more intriguing, and I would argue more ominous. Has life been at this stage before? And would we know if it had? We're going to pause.
On Earth.
On Earth.
On Earth.
On Earth. We're going to pause for a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more.
Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Here's where it gets crazy. Okay, the whole time I was working on this stuff, we had this one coming for a while. I kept thinking of the Ballad of Buster Scruggs, where the Franco character is getting hanged and turns around and says, first time. It's not a spoiler because that's a meme already.
It is.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know of that? Oh, it's worth it. It's worth it. I'm sorry, Matt, if I ruined it, but it's good. It's just one moment in a much larger thing, like humanity. So science fiction literature, they've explored this idea before. The concept of ancient civilizations, ancient unknown civilizations, Atlantis, Lemuria, Hyperborea, things like that. But in recent years, more and more scientists have been captivated by what we could describe as a thought experiment. A thought experiment looking for life, not in this universe or other universes, but right here on our pale blue dot. What's the simple way to put this? Like, we've all read the paper, and you can read the paper online for free, but what's their what if? What are they what ifing here?
So here it is. If you really want to parse this down to its kind of basic fundamental, it is the question, given the vast span of Earth's history, is it possible that some earlier civilization that predates our humanity may have reached that industrial level before we did? And if so, is it possible that there might be evidence of this in the historical record? And I don't mean the historical record like, you know, what historians have written in tomes. I mean, like things like ice cores and fossils and all of that stuff. Like, shouldn't there be some clue that would prove that this had happened? And if not, why?
Well, yeah. Well, and if you think about that and you think about that span of time, it even leaves in the possibility that it's not a mammalian species that could have reached that level. Oh, right.
I think it's very self-centered for us to think that it would be, you know what I mean? It's like, if we think of other potential, you know, species and civilizations, again, like we were talking about at the top, the more sci-fi kind of conjecture version of this, I think it's very absurd to think that it would resemble anything that we're familiar with at all.
Yeah, there are a lot of things that we have to wrestle with when we ask this question, and it's an endlessly fascinating question. First, you know, if it's old enough, mammals weren't really a thing unless mammals evolved twice, which is asking a lot. Not impossible, but asking a lot. It's like, you know, winning a lottery ticket, getting hit by the lightning on a second day, you know, after the first day, and you're like, I gotta change. I'm spending all my lottery winnings on, you know, trauma wards. But this question captivated two scientists in particular, and they're both big deals. Adam Frank, who is an astrobiologist at the University of Rochester, and Gavin Schmidt, who is the director of the Goddard Institute for Space Studies in New York City, out of NASA. And first, they were just talking. They were just, Frank approached Schmidt and said, hey, what do you think about the concept of detecting alien civilizations by looking at how they might have impacted the climate of a planet, right? Could we use ice cores? Could we use tree rings, dendrochronology to figure something out? And then eventually, after they they both were super on board, 10 toes down for this. And they were like having these late night conversations for a while. And then eventually they realized, heck, we could expand this question and bring it home. We could ask the same thing about the planet we're on now. They call it the Silurian hypothesis. And this is not a shout out to Silurian the way it's used in academia and geology. This is a shout out to Doctor Who fans.
It sounds like an alien race to me. The Silurians.
They are Doctor Who.
I know, that's what I'm saying. It's perfect. It's a perfect word for it.
It is. And it's a great name. So they write this paper, and it's a legit paper. Again, do read it online. It is free. Keep in mind that it is a scientific paper. It is in a journal. So there's some hard science in there. Not hard as in difficult, but, you know, like quantitative data. And they walk through a lot of questions. We're going to walk through them today and see what we think about this.
There's also great writing about it that is a little more digestible that you can find.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can find some great articles on Wired. You can find, you can find tons of analysis. But do check it out, you know, crack open your beverage of choice or your vice of choice and prepare to have your mind blown. What are we all drinking today? I see a bubbly. I see a Gatorade. I got some weird Japanese drink called coffee-flavored milk drink.
Oh, so it's coffee with
delicious.
Milk.
Delicious.
Oh, it's Korea's favorite. Okay.
You're not drinking Mr. Brown today?
No, I'm out of Mr. Brown. I've got a weird, disparate collection of coffee.
Kind of a juice box, a coffee juice box situation.
It is. It is. There it is. All right. So they're having this conversation, and they eventually publish this paper, and they say, okay, is it possible to detect an industrial civilization that preceded what we know of history by looking at the geological record? Could there have been something that was on a global scale that made enough of an impact, like humans are doing now, such that we could find traces, vestiges of this eons later, all the way here in the age of the Anthropocene? And to be fair, they're not making wild claims. They don't immediately blow smoke. You can get that they're very cautious when you read this. They're not doing a weekly world news tabloid. It's not, they're not trying to make money. This is published in an outfit called the International Journal of Astrobiology. I'm not going to pretend that I have a subscription, but I did read the paper. But
probably pricey.
I'm not up to date on that journal, you know.
I know we're going to get into specifics, but this, the implication being, obviously, we're not talking about an epoch here on Earth necessarily that we missed or that, you know, was erased in some way. We're talking about that some star stuff from one of these other civilizations found its way into the formation of ours. And then we would be able to potentially dig deep and find little clues to something that happened, you know, far, far away.
It's both. It's both. They started with the idea of looking in other parts of the galaxy, and they realized they could apply the same thought experiment to Earth itself. And they're pretty skeptical about this because they don't want to come off sounding like crackpots. And guys, if you're listening, you don't at all. They had one quote that really stood out where they say, "While we strongly doubt that any previous industrial civilization existed before our own, asking the question in a formal way that articulates explicitly what evidence for such a civilization might look like raises its own useful questions related to both astrobiology and to Anthropocene studies." So really, they're saying, hey, look, guys, we know it sounds a little out there, but even if you think it's out there, the way we approach this question can lead us to more research in proven things like astrobiology, the age of, the age of humanity, the Anthropocene. And also, we don't have any financial motive. At the very end of the paper, they make that very clear. They're like, we don't have any funding for this paper. We didn't ask for any. We just think it would be cool if more people started thinking about this. And then they do just what you're describing there, Noel. They start with a very approachable intro to like what an astrobiologist would do, what scientists do when they're thinking about searching for non-terrestrial life, aliens. That's where their origin point was. And they talk about some of the coolest stuff on planet Earth, the things you could compare to possible non-terrestrial life. You want to start small, you're looking at extremophiles. If you ever run into extremophiles, you're in a neighborhood you are not built for.
Like some of those deep sea fellas that are just weirdos. They're weird. And
tardigrades.
Yeah, man. The ones that like can survive, at extreme temperatures and still look cute as a button, let me say.
Well, and the concept here is that perhaps some of these survived from that same time, right?
Yeah, that would be one of the concepts when they're applying it to Earth, right? And then also, in general, if you're an astrobiologist, or a xenobiologist, et cetera, you're looking at extremophiles and you want to find life forms that are surviving in an environment that might resemble something you can reasonably assume is out there in the ink. That's where they start with, but then they say, okay, well, let's think this a little further, right? Now it gets increasingly controversial. So the search for life, the umbrella is that you search for analogs on Earth that look like they could live in an alien environment. Subset of that under the umbrella, a smaller umbrella, I guess, is the search for intelligent life, which gets kind of controversial, right? You have to make a lot of assumptions about intelligence. And under that, a third, even smaller, tiny umbrella is the holy grail of the entire search, the search for a civilization made of some intelligent life form that also has the ability to communicate somehow with human beings. If that happens, I'm sorry, various religions, that's officially the biggest thing that ever happened.
I mean, it's not a great mythology, but I there are things about the movie Prometheus that I enjoyed, the Alien prequel, because it kind of explores some of these things, the idea that things from another galaxy or another dimension could somehow, interact with humans. And by intelligent, in that respect, we mean pure murderous rage. You know what I mean? So like the idea of what does intelligence mean? It could just mean the most extreme levels of cunning and desire to wipe out and exterminate anything that is not them.
Kind of a dark forest approach for all the sci-fi nerds, right? And they have to acknowledge primary assumptions. One of the big assumptions that supports the whole Silurian hypothesis is this. They're saying, okay, any civilization capable of communicating with humans in some way, we have to assume they have developed an industry of some sort. Now, is it totally possible that there could be a purely organic kind of civilization? Like they grow their radios or they have telepathy or something like that? Sure, that's possible, but there's no real life comparison of that human scientists know yet. So what human scientists know is stuff like building radio technology. So finding something like that, that is the kicker. That's the good version of winning the lottery and getting struck by lightning twice.
But also like we build things that we cannot do with our bodies. We build things because we don't have these abilities. So we want to like level up and have these powers that potentially other civilizations or species that we're not aware of could have innately. I mean, even like, dolphins and certain sea creatures do have the ability to communicate via sonar, and that's not something that we can do with our meat bodies. So the question of industry starts to become a rabbit hole in and of itself, because, would a sufficiently advanced civilization even need an economy? Would they even need the ability to, like, quote unquote, make money if they were situated in such a way where everyone just kind of was able to communicate and coexist naturally without that kind of stuff? I would argue the idea of industry and economy is sort of a negative byproduct of humanity.
Again, no one has yet to prove a difference between the concept of economy and the concept of religion. So I'm with you there. And certain focused modes of thought could also be considered a technology in some ways. But you're right. So Frank and Schmidt are asking their assumptions. They say, okay, if we want to find this diamond in the universal rough, then let's assume life has arisen somewhere, anywhere, and that some species are what we would understand as intelligent. If those two things are true, then how often do these life forms reach what we would call the industrial civilization stage? And this is where humanity is really at a disadvantage, because if you know basic science, you want a good sample size. Our sample size is one. We have one example. It's humans. That's the only thing.
And we talked about Homo sapiens, Ben. What was the min max there 250,000 years ago?
Yeah.
When we began that trek up towards technology. And if you think about that time scale, we've only been in the industrial age for 300 years.
Right. Insane. Again, the arrogance to believe, you know, that with that span of time, we've figured it all out, or that we have all the answers or something, or that we're the most advanced.
But this is terribly exciting when you think about the Silurian hypothesis, because complex organisms, life on Earth, have been around for millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of years. So the potential for something, even an industrial civilization, to develop out of that is there. I mean, it really is, just from a time scale perspective, because it would be a quick blip. Mm-hmm. And really, for me, guys, the big question is, when something like that occurs, when an intelligent species, you know, emerges and then technology is found and industrialization occurs, is there some kind of endpoint to the beginning of that industrial state that ends in the collapse of that industrial state with, like, the loss of the species?
Right. Is the broad, like, are these collapses somewhat predictable and predetermined, right? Is the Bronze Age collapse something that just every life form at a given threshold shits the bed? Or then is the post-industrial threshold another one of those oopsies?
Right. Yeah, I mean, you see examples of it even in the Bible with, like, the great floods and, like, Sodom and Gomorrah and all of these things, and civilizations that, you know, got too big for their britches being wiped out by virtue of their own arrogance, you know, usually. And I would argue that it is predictable. But, you know, as we know, the timelines kind of maybe, honestly, we're probably due for one because of the exponential escalation of the damage that we do, you know?
Yeah, but also it's, when is due for one? It's kind of like when someone says Yellowstone is due for an eruption. Again, there's a ballpark there, and human lives are an infinitesimal fraction of that time. So this is, again, like you said, Matt, this is such a short time period. It is reasonable to ask, could this have happened before? If so, how would modern civilization No, how would you be able to prove it? Well, if we were to look to Earth for proof of some previously unknown, beyond ancient civilization, we got to dig, literally. We'd be looking into the planet. And this is where we learn about stuff like the Quaternary, which is the past 2.5 million years. It is not a measure of time that the average person uses very often. Right? We think more like 15 minutes and, you know, I'll be there in a half hour, etc. And if you are in the South, please know we're lying to you about that punctuality. Eventually someone from the South will get there. But okay, if you look at the past 2.5 million years, there is loads of evidence for hominids, like Denisovans, Neanderthals. They lived, they left a mark. You can see evidence of their cultures. You can also see evidence of things like climate change, soil horizon, the passage of time and the change in the surface. But the fossil record, the geological record, I should say, is woefully incomplete. Once you get past that 2.5 million mark, you're in an uphill situation. That's where you got to start making all the holes. You know, that's why mining operations and drilling operations find weird stuff all the time. That's why Russia, this is way before the war with Ukraine. That's why Russia one day said, let's just dig a hole as deep as we can and see what happens.
But, you know, frankly, they're not doing that in the service of science and discovery. So, you know, as we know, things tend to get funded more if there's like a monetary gain involved. And it also means that, yeah, maybe they might report it to scientists or they, you know, they have scientists, but these are like oil scientists that their job is to figure out the best holes to drill to get the best return on their investment. But it does mean that we're probably lacking some information in the historical record because it is very expensive to dig that deep, literally.
And then that poor creator out there beyond the bounds of the heavens is going, oh, come on.
Yeah, the Seinfeld shrug.
What's the deal with the guys? Oil is just like a thing. It's just a thing that happened. You're supposed to be in a fern based economy anyway. So,
I mean, Fern Gully, you know, they had it figured out, the last rainforest
or the Tanuki and Pompoko. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So maybe we could look at fossils, right? That makes sense. People know about dinosaurs because they found fossils. Fossils that probably launched at least some of the myths of dragons.
But, you know, fossilization, if as you've learned from movies like Jurassic Park, the documentary Jurassic Park, it's a real crapshoot. It's got to be the exact right conditions to generate that fossil record. You know, it has to do with climate. It has to do with how the creature in question or the organism in question died, where it was, the situation. It really is kind of like that whole winning the lottery and getting struck by lightning on the same day scenario. So therefore, we're depending on, I mean, sure, it's a long timeline. So, you know, technically your likelihood to find some over a longer timeline for those conditions to have occurred multiple times does get more likely, but it doesn't mean it's complete because it's not based on anything specific. It's not based on anything that's meant to show us the way. It's just a bunch of random elements aligning in such a way that it shows us some stuff.
Think about how many humans are on the planet right now. Ben, what's the latest numbers? 8 billion?
It's close to. Yeah. Oh, we get to do the world population clock. Last time we checked, it was a little bit north of 7.8 billion. And right now, it is 7.98 billion. So it'll reach 8 billion in your lifetime.
Tomorrow. No, yeah. I'm just kidding. There's 8 billion of us, and if we all died, and if every time a thing died, we would all leave a fossil, right? And you would have a really good chance, if you were the next civilization, of finding us. But that's not the case. As you said, these very specific things, environmental factors, have to meet to make a fossil, and we've only got a couple thousand dinosaur fossils. That's crazy town.
Millions and millions of dinosaurs. We'll never know. It's completely possible that there were multiple species of what we call dinosaurs today that in their glory days numbered in the millions, and just where they were and where they died, they happened not to have the right environment to become fossils, right? Like, not everybody naturally mummifies, you know, because they're not in the right arid conditions.
We found some of the best ones out west because of things like tar pits, you know, because that was just a larger trap kind of where they would, you know, decay and be preserved in just the right way. But other parts of the world don't have those, you know, and so it's a lot more rare to have those situational kind of factors align.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Otherwise, we would be, you know, inundated in the bones of the dead. Modern Earth would be even more of a graveyard than it actually is. It would appear to be more of one. But so from this, Frank and Schmidt say a species as recent as our good old pal Homo sapiens might not end up existing in the fossil record at all. And add to that, the likelihood of objects made by the homies, those surviving, those odds are also pretty bad because Earth eats things all the time.
Yeah. even giant structures that you imagine would be around or we see in post-apocalyptic movies that are supposed to take place far in the future, the skeletons of those structures, their fossils, would not be around.
Yeah, which means cities are, you know, they're going to go the way of the dodo too. I mean, this is a statistic that might surprise people. So the majority of the human population currently lives in urban environments. That's true. That's a threshold that was recently crossed. Even with that, today, no matter how busy your city or community feels, you might be astonished to realize human urban centers make up about 1% of Earth's entire surface area. So there's not as much out there as we might think, right? And without constant maintenance, those few structures that do exist will be eaten by nature, and it won't take 1,000 years. Most of them, it's like a couple decades. And then, you know, you have that I am the grass, let me work moment. I remember the poem. I'll find it later, but it's moving. Anyway, fast forward 1,000,000 years, any physical evidence would long ago have vanished. 1,000,000 years is such a long time that tectonic plates can move, right? And so if there was something that was built on the San Andreas Fault and it was a stone structure that said, this is going to last forever. Yeah. Adios, you know, go with God. But the best we could hope to find then, and from their perspective, which seems very logical, is minor anomalies, stuff that doesn't quite work out in sedimentary layers. So humanity's probability of finding direct evidence is pretty low. It'd be super cool to find long buried ancient technology. That's what some of our favorite sci-fi films and stories are about, and video games, by the way. But the odds just aren't there. The planet is alive. It's a living thing over multiple natural processes, over nigh incomprehensible spans of time. It's a hungry boy, and it eats everything. But we're not left alone in the dark here. Luckily, Frank and Schmidt have provided a pretty compelling argument for the stuff we should be looking for. We'll tell you after a word from our sponsor.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it.
We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Okay, we're back. The question I think we've arrived to at this point is, what should we be looking for? We know how incomplete the record is, even for our, you know, civilization. So what are these marks? What are these kind of flags that we should be looking for that might potentially point to other civilizations beyond our, you know, galaxy, beyond our anything that we know?
Well, this is kind of what we talked about. You look at the Earth itself, you look at the layers of it, and you go, what could have happened in this general area at this time? I wonder what the CO2 levels were like. Were there high levels of some specific chemical in the atmosphere within a certain range of years, which you could imagine would be pollution or something, right? If there was an industrial civilization, it's really the only way to do it. It's indirectly looking for evidence of this stuff.
Yeah, like you could see evidence of things like rapid changes in temperature or climate way, way back in the day. And this is not controversial science. You can find those indicators. They're fairly they would make sense to the experts. Or someone taps geothermal power sources. I mean, they'd have to put a lot of work in, but they could leave a mark. And then another thing that's interesting / depressing, nitrogen-based fertilizers could result in an anomalous chemical composition in sediments. Or the thing that you alluded to so beautifully earlier, Matt, isotopes, isotope ratios. Remember a flashback to your high school or college teacher telling you about half-lives of different elements and things? There are two things capable of producing something like plutonium-244. They are supernovas and human beings, which is a pretty cool list to be on. So it's like Hawkeye teaming up with the Dark Phoenix. This comic book reference is unnecessary, but we're going to keep it. So
is the Dark Phoenix Jean Grey, or is that somebody else? Okay. Okay. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. I knew we were talking about the same thing.
The bad guy version of Jean Grey, or at least I think maybe she turned good eventually. I don't get deep into the actual comics. I wait till it comes out in the movies, but I think that's right.
Yeah, you guys are right. Also, I would skip the Dark Phoenix film.
One was problematic. It like had a really troubled production, and apparently it shows in the final product.
Comic is great though. So discovering this stuff, like, that would be almost a smoking gun. If you discovered plutonium-244, you would have to start asking some pretty haunting questions. And then, of course, there's the idea of plastics, right? They take forever to degrade. I know we talk about this all the time in the show because plastics are going to be a continuing danger for everybody alive now. But also, well, we're talking about a time scale so large that plastics might also not be a huge player for much of Earth's surface. Because, all right, here's my understanding. Correct me if I'm off base here. So plastics can last like 500, 1,000 years. They degrade due primarily to solar ultraviolet radiation. That's the number one cause of plastic degradation. So you leave plastic out, like, just like mummies and fossils need specific circumstances, plastic does too. If you leave it out in the sun, eventually, you know, a millennia later, bye-bye. But if you go past the photic zone of the ocean, if you go so deep into the sea that light no longer penetrates, like sinking plastic, ultimately making it to the sea floor, then your odds of, if you're a little piece, like your little, you know, bottle of soda or something, or Gatorade, Powerade, then your odds of surviving on the seafloor are much higher for a much longer period of time.
Until a species of shrimp comes along and is evolved to eat plastic.
They're my favorite. God,
laser eye shrimp. Yeah, the ones that can just shoot photons right out of their little shrimp eyes.
I can't.
I was being serious. There are.
There is. Yeah,
I know.
Yeah. Okay.
I know you are. I know, and I ruined that, but I still stand by what I said. I love the idea.
I love it. I hope those shrimp grow larger. I don't know why we're not doing more genetic experimentation on them. Come on. You got to be the change. Anyway, I'm sure there are some people in the crowd who are saying we can't save every falling sparrow because humanity is too busy killing every non-human thing. That's true. Humans are amid a great mass extinction. It's not the first one ever, but it's one that humans are at least partially responsible for. We'd be very diplomatic there.
You are. Good, good, good on you. You got a political career ahead of you, my friend.
Oh, gosh. I hope not. But so there's this thing, right? We know it's reasonable to assume that if there is a great die-off, it will show in the fossil record. Large mammal extinctions that occurred at the end of the last ice age can be associated with the beginning of the Anthropocene. That's from Frank and Schmidt. So that's interesting because it means the sudden absence of a lot of things in the fossil record may be proof all its own. And we know this because evidence of mass extinctions are found by sudden absences in the fossil record correlated with other changes that seem to happen suddenly, at least suddenly in geological terms.
And they go further, Frankenschmidt. And by the way, Frank, when you say it, Frankenschmidt, I think it sounds like a Voltron kind of situation. I love that. So they propose that you imagine that the civilization did exist. And then they ask, could it have shared this great dream of, you know, our humanity and our civilization, the thing that we kind of hang our hat on in terms of like our, you know, progress as a species to go forth, to sally forth into the great beyond. And I'm not talking about the afterlife here. I'm talking about the stars. I'm talking about space, the space beyond and between.
Well, yeah. And what if they knew that a massive impact was going to occur on Earth at a certain time because they were tracking when it was going to happen? They didn't have the technology to stop it. So enough of them ejected, if you will, left, and may one day return, you guys, as reptilian extraterrestrials.
Finally!
Or shrimp with laser eyes, you know?
That's the noise they make.
Huh?
That's clearly the noise they make.
Eyes go pew, pew, pew.
So the thing is, what's fascinating, the reason they bring this up is because Earth being such a hungry thing being a living planet and continually having these processes, it's tough to keep things permanent over the long span. There's tectonic activity. There's erosion. But the moon and Mars, they don't roll like that. They don't orbit like that, I should say. God, that's a terrible joke. But the moon does have like a sort of erosion. You know, it's just way more chill than the Terran version. So it may be that the evidence or the question of the Silurian hypothesis could be answered not by something discovered on Earth, but by something discovered on Mars.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's interesting because it's less likely to have been wiped away.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's the
thing.
Unless
they messed up Mars first.
I know.
And then came to Earth.
Too. I know. Curiouser and curiouser. So you're making a great point, Matt. There are also a lot of caveats we have to add because you just had one of the most important caveats with the Mars question. What was it? What did it used to be like? You know,
that's a great title for a podcast. What did it used to be like?
Why don't we give it a try? Why don't we do a podcast? I was talking with Lauren Vogelbaum a while back, a good friend of the show. You've heard her on the show before. Check out her shows, Brain Stuff and Savor. And I was pitching this idea of just a terrible podcast based on all the ideas we had come up with and decided not to pursue at the company and all the weird one-offs we did. Would you guys be in? Could I get you to go on that if we do it?
Down to clown. Yeah.
Matt just flashed the evil eye. Nice.
This caveat, though, is put very Frank and Schmidtly by Frank and Schmidt. Thusly, quote, there is an interesting paradox in considering the anthropogenic footprint on a geological timescale. The longer human civilization lasts, the larger the signal one would expect in the record. However, again, that goes back to what we were saying about fossil record. A longer timeline, you're going to have more hits, even if it does require very specific situations to lead to those hits going on. However, the longer a civilization lasts, the more sustainable its practices would need to have become in order to survive.
Hear that, homie sapiens? Also, shout out to the book Sapiens by Noah Yuval Harari. Excellent read. Worth your time. Controversial, but would love to hear what you think. Oh, and by the way, off air aside, thanks to the good Mr. Matt Frederick, we've confirmed the poem I was alluding to, like someone with brain addles, brain fever, is a real thing. It's called Grass. It's by a guy named Carl Sandburg. It's excellent. It's short. Read it and then just have it locked and loaded. Be ready to drop
it. And weep.
Yeah, you'll sound really deep because it is a deep, cool poem. And I wish it wasn't so apropos to these our modern days. But
yeah, hence the weeping is what I was
saying. Frank and Schmidt go on and they make another great point when they're talking about this paradox we introduced. They say, quote, the more sustainable a society, for example, in energy generation, manufacturing, or agriculture, the smaller the footprint on the rest of the planet. But the smaller the footprint, the less of a signal will be embedded in the geological record. Thus, the footprint of a civilization might be self-limiting on a relatively short timescale.
Yeah, and think about like space trash. You know, if you were doing a good job, there would be no space trash. You know, we're the ones who leave that stuff behind because we're not very sustainable.
But it is interesting, right, that we haven't found a lot of space trash that predates human civilization.
That's what I'm saying. Right?
I mean, none.
Well, that's because, well,
except for the Black Knight satellite.
You could argue, though, that if there was, you know, to this whole line of thinking, if there was a civilization that predated ours that was better and more sustainable, they just wouldn't have done that. They would have been more thoughtful. They would have just done a better job.
Guys, we learned our lesson from Mars, okay? We're very lucky to have a mulligan here. Let's do a better job next time. And for some reason, let's make sure we keep it a secret. So this I wish Matt's emphatic nod there is doing it. Yeah.
Is there a science fiction story? There has to be.
Many.
Where the twist is that we're the least evolved culture and civilization of them all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are some academics who have speculated the same thing. The argument is basically like, would we want to talk to us knowing what we know? I mean, I said it before, and I know we're running long here, but imagine if you are an extraterrestrial and you're an advanced civilization, then you have to understand that Earth looks like a really trashy house with a bunch of rusted appliances out in the front yard. You know, we got cars on bricks. We got like, you know, the space equivalent of a half open fridge just dangling somewhere. Who knows when it's going to fall?
It's
you
like
would drive by that house.
Yeah, it's like a universal Jeff Foxworthy joke, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just so. And okay, there's another caveat. All this, again, the small sample size, all the stuff humans are looking at is all the stuff humans have done. So the assumption then is that other civilizations would have approached the industrial age and technology the way humans did. It is completely possible some earlier civilization took a different path. Human beings could be the outlier. That's a huge part of the issue. This thing leads to what's called unfalsifiable speculation. That is a much fancier, much more diplomatic way of saying someone can make something up off the top of their head, claim it's true, and confidently go, well, you can't prove it didn't happen, anytime someone checks on them.
What's the Villeneuve movie where they do make, it's not Contact, they do make contact, and of course the alien species doesn't resemble us at all, and they have to figure out how to, you know, communicate with it in some very kind of broad general way. Which one is that?
Is that Arrival?
Arrival, thank you. That's exactly right, and we've been saying that the whole time. If, of course, they wouldn't approach industrialization the same, because they probably don't even have the same equipment that we do. They would have to, like, you know, suit it to their own bodily needs and nutritional needs and civilizational, if that's a word, needs.
Yeah, and I know we're naming a lot of like sci-fi authors. This is just perfect for it. Check out a writer named Adrian Tchaikovsky. This spelled like the composer. This guy wrote a series called Children of Time, Children of Ruin, which, no spoilers, examines how different life forms might evolve and approach technology differently. And that's a huge part of the Silurian hypothesis. The authors said, look, okay, we're skeptical. We can't prove it, but it's interesting. We're not in it for the money. We want other people to look at this. We're priming the pump for future scientists. And it should be fascinating. There's an addictive, frustrating allure to the Silurian hypothesis. Humanity overall cannot completely rule it out. I'm doing the explosion noise, the stuff to blow your mind noise. You can't prove it didn't happen, which is nuts. That's a problem.
A problem we're not going to solve today, but we do want to know what you think about it. Seriously, what do you think? Have you found anything? Do you know of anybody doing research into this stuff right now? Just what are your thoughts? You know, grounded or high or whatever. We want to hear them.
That's right. You can find us all over the internet. We are Conspiracy Stuff on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook, where we have a Facebook group. Here's where it gets crazy. Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram.
And if that doesn't quite bag your badgers, if your hypothesis is that one should not sip the social meads, then we have another way to contact us. That's our telephone number. Say it with me, folks. 1-833-STDWYTK. You'll have a beep like so. Beep. You'll have 3 minutes. Those 3 minutes are your own. Go nuts. Give yourself the nickname, the code name you always wanted. Tell us what's on your mind. Tell us whether or not we can share your name and or voice on the air. And most importantly, don't censor yourself. If you have more to say, we want to hear it all. Write it out for us. Give us the links. Give us the pictures. As I've been saying lately, take us to the edge of the rabbit hole. We will do the rest. All you have to do is drop us a line at our good old-fashioned email address where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.